flag program. I'll have to do it 2 years, I guess. But this is a regular scheduled meeting of the San Juan County Public Hospital District Number 1. And today's date is Thursday, June 28th. And again, it's 3 o'clock, not 5. And we are convening at the Frank Wilson EMS building. Before I call for a motion to accept the consent agenda, I'd like to add one resolution to the agenda on a new business, Resolution 18491, which relates to potential changing of the meeting time from 5 o'clock to 3 p.m. So that'll be at the end of this the regular session before the executive session. Can the board hear a motion for consent agenda?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion, additions, or revisions? We hear none. All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimously approved. Second item on the agenda is San Juan County PhD number 1 operations report. Pam Hutchins, superintendent. Pam?
Thank you. For the month of May, the total receipts posted by the county were $104,501.30. Of this total, $103,200.01 were property tax revenues. There were $183.86 in timber harvest tax and $1,117.43 were the reimbursement that SJI EMS pays us back for the state audit fees for the month. The total cash available at the end of May was $857,194.29. And then on the disbursement side, the county, it totaled $21,094.64 for May. Of that total, there was $1,368 for payroll, and this was payroll for just the newest commissioners for the county to process for the first quarter, and $107.01 for payroll taxes. And the total accounts payable claims for all accounts payables processed by the county was $19,619.63. For the financials, if you draw your attention to the financials just for May, the comparison between
fortunately the new bylaws haven't passed. Yeah. Otherwise you'd be fine.
Comparing, we usually do the comparison between last year of 2017 and this year of 2018. And the notable differences in the budgets were we increased the business office salaries this year in 2018, which was more than the 2017 budget. The dues and licenses were more. We had conferences and the budget for that. And the total tax revenues, the tax revenue money for May came in at about $58,000 less than the May last year, but that fluctuates from year to year depending on when the due date is for the taxes and people pay them late or mortgage companies and such. So those were the main differences that were over budget. But if you look at the total profit and loss budget performance for May, the year-to-date budget is $103,252.03. And our actual budget from January through May is $133,009.04. So we are still under budget for May for about $30,000. Do you have any questions on the financials? No?
I looked and I can't find it right now.
Okay.
money spent making records in, for public information, Freedom of Information Act?
Yes. What about those?
Has that gone up or is it about the same?
We haven't had a public records request since April. We have one that we're processing right now that just began that we are still gathering information on. Mm-hmm. Right now, we don't know what that cost will be because we're still gathering the information. But our costs for the year of 2018 is comparable to 2017, but the legislature just passed for 2018 that we can now start charging for electronic records, the time spent doing those, where before we could only charge for paper copies. So that we haven't figured the cost yet for how much staff time it takes us. And
that is as of June the 1st, that law is effective?
It's effective. I don't know the exact date,
right?
But there is going to be a change.
There will be a line item in here.
I can put a line item in. It's never had a line item for just public.
Want
a line item that way?
Receipts back.
Okay. And then they also, we will post that change when we determine the new cost on the website. That's something you're required to do, mm-hmm. and update our website for how to apply for a public record and what all the procedures are, so, and for the cost. So, okay, Dr. Edwards?
So that cost, is that a real cost? What it costs the organization, or is that a cost on an hourly basis dictated by the state?
No, we can do a study, a time study, and compute what the real cost is for hourly rate, and then adopt. Then we would have to bring it to the board, and then you would look at it, and then you would have to adopt that.
And we're doing that not. Study as we process this one, as we process this Freedom of Information.
Yes. That's something that we learned at the conference, that this law had just formally been approved, and we're given the ways that we can adopt the cost, and one of them was to
do a standard formula that we're going to follow.
Yes.
Any other place
in the
mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, ma'am.
Right. That's financials. Now, the operations report for May. The Inter-Ada Medical Center, as many of you may know, is being shown, and several contracts have been offered for the building. And just for your information, the district cannot sell public property for less than 90% of the average of 3 market valuations or appraisals. And this is to protect public property, that it will not be sold at too low of a price, because that would be gifting of public funds. And each offer after it is received has to be discussed, brought to the board, and evaluated on the asking price, feasibility period, and the closing date. And hopefully with the increased activity we're having this summer, this might be the year that we can sell the medical center and get it off the district rolls. I've been working on the job duties and powers of delegation documents. That is still ongoing, along with the San Juan Island EMS chief, that will be presented later when those are complete. And the revised bylaws are being presented today, and discussion will be on those to see whether the commissioners are going to approve, reject, or further revisions. The 2015-2016 Washington State audit is finally nearing completion. All the documents have been approved by the district and the auditors, and an exit interview date will be set. They've given us a date after July 4th. They will set that date. And also, the district has been studying the grant opportunities being offered by the Washington State Archives to help making record retention and organization of records that we have to keep easier. So that will be an ongoing thing we'll be studying. We have to have the grant applications in by July 30th. So that's operations. Do you have any questions?
Pam, I was wondering if you could remind me or refresh us on the three market valuations. We're expecting the third one.
We received the third market valuation. It came in at a price, but it was not as detailed as some of the others. So I asked for him to go over it again, but it will be coming in, and we will be able to figure that final 90% price before probably another contract is settled.
And is that expected soon?
Yes, very soon. And also we will discuss the price in executive session.
Okay. Any other questions of Pam? Thank you, Pam. Chief Martin, someone on an EMS.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. It's been a busy month. We've been, our call load has gone up a little bit for the month of May. 105 calls, and we're looking that we should be probably even out, or maybe just a little bit ahead by the time I report this year. Yes, sir.
You said May and
I do. So that 105 calls for April, that should be May. Average number of EMTs, 2.9. We transported 21 patients down to Island Air, 8 patients over to airlift, none with the Navy. Our budget, we are, the budget's looking really good. We've got revenue for this month, or last month, is $165,714. Year to date, $1,103,941. So we're 53% of our budget projections, and we're only 42% of the year. So we're looking good there. Expenses $156,217 for the month, $799,620 year to date, 38%. So things are looking, we're keeping things in line. Cash revenues, we've got $976,253 with 5.6 months of average expenses in for reserve. As Pam was saying, she said that our final audit is, all the paperwork is done. We've been working with the auditors, working with Chris. And so we're looking at maybe tentatively the 20th of July is when we're going to be meeting over there in Bellingham. GEMT, we've got our numbers back from them. And so there was a very much entailed paper process of accounting and going over budgets and looking where we're at. And the average cost per transport that this document figured out is that we're about $4,026 per transport. Looking at other departments throughout the state, there is one department in Whatcom County that they came out to be over $9,000 per transport, and they're a BLS transport. So our numbers are right in the middle. There's a lot of them that I talked to. We're right around the $3,000 range, so we're right in the average there. So what that means to us is that when we have a Medicaid patient that we're going to be transporting emergent, that if the patient is has signed up in Medicaid pre-Obama era, that we would expect to get about 50% of that $4,000, so about $2,000 is what we'd expect to get. If they had signed up post-Obama period, then that number raises up to about 95%. So 95% of the $4,000. And then this doesn't count the non-federally funded programs that the state pays for Medicaid. So if they are a state, if they are in a program that the feds do not support, then we go back down to the average state price, which is for an ALS transport, $168.43. For ALS, BLS transports are $115.34 in a $5 per mile transport. So you can see there's a big ambiguity on that, and plus the fact that when we get paid that $168 or $115, there is that's all we receive on that patient. So there's regardless of our no out-of-pocket expenses that we do not charge here, but I think if they're from Seattle, we still do not receive anything different from them, like Medicare. So this is exciting. We don't get a whole lot of true Medicaid patients. And then the back monies that we put in there for the last year, they have 24 months to pay that to us. So as soon as we get payment on that, I'll let you know.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
At the every cost per call.
Yes.
So that is, there's an N over a D.
Mm-hmm.
What makes up the N and what makes up the D?
So we take...
Are there capital expenses that are applied in the N also?
What we do, yeah. So we take our... What we do is we take our... last year's budget, and we take all our revenue over expenses, and there's certain expenses that we cannot charge, that being your guys' what we pay for anything for our commissioners, that's not allowed. Certain lawsuit type stuff is not allowed. So there's a big 10-15 page document that tells me what is not allowable. So I just went through our budget and said this is what is allowable, what is not allowable, and then just plug those numbers in.
And so we're able to amortize the building, and that becomes an expense for that year. Is that amortization rate?
Yes.
And a D is just the number of runs.
Number of runs, yes. So, yeah.
So, the Whatcom, they had $9,000. Did they just have a big capital expense, or why are they so much? I mean, is there something there that we need to watch for that we're not putting ourselves in negative balance?
So, fire departments, with fire departments, they had to...
This was a fire department one now, not just the plain EMS and Whatcom.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, this is a fire department. And they... So what you had to do if you were a fire department is you go through all your stations and you say this station responds to 1,000 calls.
Yeah.
And then we have two fire engines, we have two aid units and the square feet, and then you gotta divide, you know, how much time your people are doing fire stuff versus aid stuff, and it was a lot more complex than what I had to do. And so they don't do a whole lot of transports, so when they divide it by transports.
And so their D is small.
Yeah.
And therefore.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not that their N is big, it's their D is small.
Correct.
Got it.
Yeah.
So we need more Ds.
So then the Accountable Community of Health. We just got notification that we receiving the first round of monies for our community paramedicine program. And this is for five counties. And so our plan for this is that we were going to pool our monies together as far as the five counties is concerned, and then have a conference set up with the people who know community paramedicine systems, primarily out of Minnesota, and have the chiefs, have our commissioners, have our the people who we affect, the people who a lot of people in the audience that if they're interested in going there to learn about this and what program and how we want to do this. Have our medical program directors there, so the stakeholders, get them involved in this and it really nailed down the direction we want to go with this.
And we'll publish this on our website so that we know when it is and where it is.
Yeah, so we're in the process of setting that up right now. We have a meeting set up with the ACH to meet with the community paramedic group to get, so we're all in line with what we need to do and where we're going. So the fact that we just got a notification that our first check is coming, and that first check is about $28,000, which is good news. We've been working on this project for a while, and now that we're seeing this come in, means that we're on the right track. Staffing, we're looking at our different staffing models of what we've been doing and how we're doing it. We got one of our EMTs is due to have a baby in October. So we're going to be having to put her on light duty as soon as her doctor says that she's no longer able to go on call. So we're going to have to find someone to replace her while we're while she's on light duty, and then she's going to be taking time off afterwards. So we're looking at staffing there. We're looking at staffing so that we have 24-hour coverage. With our EMTs, our basic life support people. So we're getting calls at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning for transports from the hospital to Island Air Hospital to the helicopter. And these are just routine calls that this person would be able to cover. And then also it'd get us out the door faster throughout the day and night. So we are looking at that, we're also looking at changing the way we pay our EMTs as well, our volunteer EMTs. Currently, we pay them $20 per call, and then if it goes over an hour, we pay them in quarters. Well, what the fire department does, and what's been recommended by L&I and our legal counsel, is that we should just pay them by the hour instead of by call. And so Carl did a study, a three-month study, had about 59% of the calls that we were able to look at. And it doesn't affect our budget negatively. It actually looks it's more of a positive look for us to do this at $15 an hour, which keeps us in line with the fire department. So we're looking at how we can do this and how Tina would be able to account for this and make sure that we do it efficiently and that we're not blowing anything, that we're not missing anything. So I'm looking at probably implementing this in August. So August 1st would be when we were starting to do this.
Jerry,
yeah.
Does this change the status of employee versus volunteer?
No, they're still considered a volunteer. According to Richard Davis, he said, because there was an audit that was done by L&I up in Whatcom County Fire District 8 here a couple years ago, and they got in a little bit of trouble because of the being paid per call, and that they it was associated per hour, and then there was the firefighters getting paid one stipend, the driver is getting paid another stipend, and the lieutenant was getting paid another stipend, and he said that Elle and I just had a play day with that, so we'd be doing this all at one pay scale.
So, Chief, does that mean that if they're being paid $15 an hour when they are on call, mm-hmm. are they on site here?
They could be either on site here or on the scene. So they would have to come here and sign in after the call to verify that they were on the call.
I wonder, do you think that will help with response time with the ambulance getting to the scene then? If someone, does that mean someone will be at the station?
The staffing, yes. So if we hire our other two people, that would give us 24-hour coverage around the clock.
Okay. I was curious about that because, we've got this thing about the benchmarks of rural response mm-hmm. times, and I know that our paramedics are responding, as soon as they can, obviously, and they're on scene, but sometimes it seems like it takes longer to get an ambulance there.
That is true.
And that is a worry, considering some of the conditions that people are in.
Absolutely.
And so, my concern is that what we have now doesn't really seem to be getting the ambulance out the door as soon as it needs to be. So do you, with this $15 an hour, are they on premise to get the ambulance out the door?
No. So they would be volunteering again, so they could be home eating dinner, watching TV, mowing the lawn. And then when the call comes out, if they respond, that's when the $15 an hour starts for them. So instead of paying them per call, we'd be paying them per hour while that call is going on.
I see. So it's not necessarily staffing the station.
Correct. But we are planning on doing a staffing of the station too, so that way we have staffing here 24 hours a day. So when we have the call for the transport from the hospital down to Island Air, we're not toning everybody else out. We can handle that with our internal people.
So what's the timeline on that?
I'm looking to start that in. Probably in a couple months. We're looking at this right now, and that's one thing that Chris and I are going to be working on next week is crunching the numbers, making sure that we're within our budget.
Okay, great. I know that I've seen some reports of some calls that have taken longer than what we would consider acceptable for an ambulance to show up on the scene.
And one of the things that's been hard to do is that sometimes the call is next door to somebody's house or downtown, and for them to get to here, they got to drive by the call.
Sure.
And that is where that seems to be one of the problems, that people don't want to drive by the call to get to the station to get the ambulance. And that has caused us a delay in a couple calls.
But if there's a paramedic already, they know they need an ambulance, doesn't it make sense for someone to go?
And that's eventually what happens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well,
yes, sir.
So back on response times within rural benchmarks.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong? 80% of our calls are in the city.
I would have to look, but approximately, yes.
And the city is R5, R6 zoning, so it's very urban.
Mm-hmm. It is actually suburban by the number of the population density. It's actually suburban.
Suburban.
Yeah.
And there's suburban response times.
Mm-hmm.
This island is
rural.
25 miles long at its longest.
Mm-hmm.
bunch of rural's response times can be 50, 60 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So our numbers, if we're working on rural only, and 80% of our calls are suburban, our numbers look really good because just we're here and 80% of the calls are a mile and a half down the road.
Correct.
Is there some way that we can see how many suburban and rural calls and how much time those are? As an emergency physician, I like them there in 8 minutes. I know that I'm not going to get 8 minutes out there, but that's where the urban, the rural ones are the ones that are going to skew this.
Yes,
the
and,
most.
And that's where they do.
And so is there some way that we can break response times, what they are, both suburban and rural,
mm-hmm.
and we'll continue to measure
yes.
in the meantime on rural benchmarks?
Yes. And we even have...
Can we get that in this report monthly?
Yes, I can do that. In fact, we even have some wilderness areas on this island, too, that which the it's defined as we can get there as soon as possible.
Right.
So there is no really time defined. It's as soon as you guys can get there. And that defines some of the areas up north of us and also the outer islands that we respond to.
Mm-hmm. So all three would then be on? They're way out there, and there's someone out there, and they're suburban. Mm-hmm. Those three we could, mm-hmm. that'd be interesting for future planning
yeah.
and budgeting.
Yeah.
And as a panel, yeah, I would be interested. In
okay, I'll work on that for next month. next month, like I was alluding to, that Chris and I are working on our next month's amended budget, and we're looking at the getting our EMTs, the paid, the volunteers, and then the hospital district getting their numbers in, mixed in with ours, and then just some other changes that we're looking at doing. So we should have the amended budget for you guys to review next month. The community, we've been doing just a host of CPR first aid classes. In fact, Lady was working on a babysitter class today, which they were supposed to be in here, and I was able to pull a little bit of pull here and have them move upstairs so we can have our commissioners meeting today. So we got a lot of that going on. Had the wilderness first aid class just last month, which is very good, or this month, I'm sorry. IAFF Local 3219, I just received notification that we're going to be opening up the contract for contract negotiations for them. The CID, I talked to our attorney, Jim Fredman, and nothing yet. He's made contact with the AG's office, and nothing. So as soon as I hear from him, you guys will be the second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth ones to know about this.
Are we spending money on this? Right, nothing's happening.
No. Nope.
Hey.
So when you have a phone call with Fredman, we don't get charged. Like a status or update?
When I call him, ask him if he heard anything, he says no.
And that's it. No,
that's
no
it.
Bill. Great.
Keep the conversation under 6 minutes.
Yeah,
yes.
Don't care.
Yeah. Operations on the next page. EMS and fire mergers talk continue. They had a meeting last night that we'll talk about a little bit more. Working with the other fire departments, the medical protocols, BLS and ALS. BLS are at the state being reviewed right now. The state had some questions on the protocols, and so the committee is working on that to define that. ALS is supposed to be done by the end of summer. Water rescue and marine response training, we're looking at that. And then we're looking at a wilderness EMT certification class this fall. And we're also looking at a EMT class on San Juan Island for 2019. We talked a little bit about the response times and that. I won't go into that. We're having a Washington State EMS evaluator class on June 30th this weekend, so our people are able to evaluate and certify EMT training on our own.
All the way up to the paramedic level?
That does work up in the paramedic level, yes. Policies and procedures, we're working on that, and then we're adding additional responders for the 4th of July weekend. So that way we have a fast response on the weekend before, the weekend after the 4th of July, and on the 4th of July itself. So that way we've got a fast response and we're ready for our public. That's all I have. Any questions, comments for me?
Cross training with fire? Were you in cross training programs with them? That was a point. We had two meetings ago with them. Yeah.
We've had a couple of classes together, but we haven't had anything
in the field.
No.
Is the EMS evaluator class related to CME or OTEP?
It's related to OTEP, yes.
I understand there's a deadline of July 1st for some materials for our county MPD, Dr. Sullivan.
That's correct.
And is that happening?
Yes, it is.
Is that on track?
Wei Sean and the crew's been working on it diligently.
Thank you, Chief Martin. The next item on the agenda is audience participation. Anyone want to address the board? Sound of silence again.
It's lonely up here, you guys. Come on, talk to us.
They don't like you anymore.
Well, they got good taste.
Okay, next category is unfinished business. The first item is Resolution 18-485, which is a resolution that relates to revising the bylaws. Historically, we've had a previous workshop discussion at the last PhD meeting. And tonight, a final review for the final version and a vote to either pass or not pass. Who would like to speak to that? Mark or Warren?
Mark, go for it.
There have been some changes here. And thanks to Carl Augusta who pointed out some language changes that were necessary. And you find that in the revision that's included in the packet. And it's in the green print. So it's a section 2.1. Section 2.5 has been consolidated now to 2.1.
Correction. That was actually my suggestion.
Oh, okay. Very good. Thank you.
I'll give you credit, though, Karin, if you'd like.
Well, no. Credit?
Yeah.
No. Karin, it's in the two emails.
Oh, I know. You mentioned it.
Okay. And thank you, Karin. I appreciate it. So that Section 2.5 has been consolidated now to 2.1. We do have to change the numbers following paragraph 2.4. with the elimination of 2.5, those have to be renumbered. But otherwise, it's just the language issues reflecting the addition of the vice chairperson that are part of the bylaws. Another community member had also commented that the bylaws did not appear to be especially well written and suggest perhaps delaying action on this today. So I'll just put that out there.
And especially well written that they weren't understandable, or they didn't like the content, or
it wasn't specified.
Isn't a lot of this language come from other bylaws that have already been approved by attorneys and boards and
our own previous
ones?
And where this comment comes
from? I received it here in the last few months.
Okay. And this the bylaws were made public, you know, at the work session that I alluded to. So, okay, thank you. So, can I hear a motion to accept the bylaws as written?
So moved.
I'll
second.
Okay, we'll give credit to Warren, I think.
Yes, we will. We will.
Very biased. any further discussion?
Yeah. One point, if we accept these, do we elect a vice chair tonight, or do we
correct
do that at another
that's on
time?
The agenda.
is there validity to, have we discussed that? Do we want to do that? But if it's on the agenda, we can discuss it then. But that's fine.
Well, it's in the bylaws, so we should discuss it before we pass the bylaws.
Well, no, not, we need to pass the bylaws first to make it even plausible.
Yeah, and then whether we do it tonight or another.
True. However, if there are board members who are not approving the idea of a vice chair, this is the time to talk about.
Oh, absolutely.
Not arguing. I'm just making sure that we discuss that point.
And actually, Warren, I mentioned that possibility that that was going to follow the bylaws, if indeed the bylaws pass at the last regular board meeting. And Lisa asked about that. So. Okay, any comments? Dr. Mark?
No comments.
Anna Lisa? Rebecca?
None.
Dr. Apple?
None.
And I have none. So let's call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Passes unanimously. And again, thank you so much, Warren and Mark, for all your hard work, as well as Nathan, sir. And I think it is well written, so that's my humble opinion. Okay, next order of business under unfinished business is the election of a vice chair commensurate with the newly passed bylaws. Can the board hear nominations?
I'd like to nominate Rebecca Smith.
Are you willing to serve, ma'am?
I have a paper.
Any further nominations?
I would nominate Mr. Appleton.
Pardon?
Appleton.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Are you?
Thank you, question.
You're always one step ahead anymore. Okay, let's go in order of those nominated. All those in favor of Rebecca Smith as vice chair, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. 3-2. You want to vote on Warren? Okay. Mine as well as academic. All those in favor of Dr. Appleton?
Aye.
Okay, so it's 3-2. At least we can render that numerically. Okay. And thank you, Rebecca, for your willingness to serve. It's a really a fun job, I think. Yeah. Okay, committee reports. First there is the ongoing discussions with San Juan Item EMS and Fire District 3. Rebecca, would you like to speak to that?
Sure. The PhD and fire departments have both been cooperating with the Citizens Advisory Group to present and help them with any of the requests that they have, and that's pretty much what we've been doing.
Okay. Any questions, Rebecca? Okay. Next item is the CCC.
Warren? They didn't meet this month, and with that goes the needle disposal program. Or investigation, I think. There are places to get rid of needles on this island. One is at the pharmacy, which has certain hours of being open. And the other one is as you walk into the sheriff's office, you know, that little tight room with the bulletproof. Not a lot of people go in there to put needles
in. I was going to say, that's sort of a disincentive. Isn't
it? Well, but those are the two places. I talked with Rick Hughes, the county council, on how they do it. They own, he's not a pharmacist, but they have a pharmacy over there. And there's, interestingly, they have a co-op that does their community recycling. And they will take them there. We have proprietary out here. I've not heard back from them yet. Hopefully I will in the next day or two. Whether they'd be willing to take needles. And then, you know, what I would like is some place where people have to get rid of needles. They don't have to go into the police station to do it. I mean, a lot of people just feel a little anxious about going in police stations, even people don't have records. Yeah. But that's where we're at right now. I've not heard back from Roach Harbor. And that's where we're at. I did learn during all of this, though, that you're talking about needles and opiates, that the hospital is going to, it looks like they're going to have a provider that can do Suboxone, is qualified to do it, and will be able to help with some, hopefully, people that have addiction issues, whether it's legal drugs or illegal drugs. That's something new to the island. Two, Naloxone is available at some parts in the county, but not here yet. And that's, I couldn't answer that question when I got asked that question on other items. So that's what I've learned so far in all of this.
Right.